capitalism is going through a spasm caused by its own generation of technologies that undermine itself.
How can you, with a straight face, make the argument that more guns will make us safer?
We need to build a wall, and it has to be built quickly.
Hello and welcome to Level Talk Programme. British scientists have studied interplanetary dust that can travel through space at up to 70 kilometres per second. They calculate that if bioparticles high in the atmosphere can be dislodged from the Earth's gravity by incoming space dust, the same process could have happened in reverse on some other planet. Now, this is not the first time that such theories have been postulated. However, the implications that life may have come from outside our own planet and that we all may indeed be aliens are really quite profound. To discuss the discoveries and what they actually mean, I'm honoured to be able to welcome to the programme Professor Chandra Wickramasinghe, the Director of the Buckingham Centre for Astrobiology at the University of Buckingham in the UK, and Dr. Martin Ferris from the Department of Spectroscopy at the Czech Academy of Science. Welcome to the programme, both of you gentlemen.
Hello, good afternoon from Prague.
Okay. Now, first of all, gentlemen, how realistic is this proposition that has been given an awful lot of publicity in the press recently? I know that you two are closely involved in this and you've been probably involved with this most of your life, but for us, it's new. Now, how realistic is this? Who'd like to start?
Maybe I would comment a little bit this study. I think that we have to split this study to two independent problems. The first topic involves consequences of so-called huge amount of interplanetary dust on the environment of the Earth. We can recalculate that the author of the paper states that about 36,000 tons of interplanetary dust enter our atmosphere every year. This number seems to be significant. However, during the last 4 billion years, the total dust received by Earth represents, for example, only amount of 3% of total weight of our atmosphere. And this is tiny amount. And actually, most of dust particles do not contain atmospheric volatiles, but silicates. And these silicates become part of planetary surface, and later they are transformed together with other rocks in plate tectonic cycle. And their amount is again absolutely negligible in comparison with mass of Earth's surface. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, interstellar and interplanetary carbonaceous dust can be source of fullerenes. Where these small carbon molecules come from, it remains a great enigma still. Yeah. And extraterrestrial delivery is a strong candidate. So why not dust? But tiny amount of fullerenes cannot contribute to bulk chemistry of the Earth. And okay. This is just a specialty. So in my opinion, interplanetary dust will influence on chemistry. However, scientists in the first 5 million years of the early our planet was exposed to considerable flux of large interplanetary bodies. Okay. And this is called early and late heavy bombardment era.
Okay. Even though there are very small amounts of this dust entering the Earth's atmosphere and penetrating through the Earth's atmosphere in various different ways, surely you don't need very much. You just need a few amino acids, you need a few life forms, and bingo, you've got life on Earth, Professor. Can you take
that,
please?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you don't need more than one or two or 100 living cells to start off the whole of life on any planet. So I think the quantity is not the relevant issue. It's the mechanism by which life can be transported. We know that life exists on the Earth, of course. We know that some of these microscopic life forms could reach high into the atmosphere, maybe even the stratosphere. And very recently, Russian cosmonauts have been discovering microorganisms, algae-type organisms on the outside of the International Space Station, which is orbiting at 400 kilometers above the Earth's surface. So you could have life that is microscopic life that is outside the surface of the Earth. And the real question is, how did life begin on the Earth? And all of the experiments that have been done so far have been based on the presumption that life had to start on the Earth from... And every single experiment, I mean, there are people who have been working on this for a lifetime, and there's been no success in turning non-life to life on the very small scale of our planet. And after all, our planet is a minuscule speck of dust in a cosmic context. So the possibility that life is transported to the Earth from the very much bigger system, which is the cosmos, has been something that many of us have discussed and talked about for quite a long time, many decades now. The recent publicity about the streams of interstellar dust that might be skimming off life from one planet in a distant solar system and bringing it to our planet is a possibility. I mean, it's one of the possible routes by which life can be transported. And I think somebody raised the question, why the 70 kilometers a second speed? And that comes from escape speed from the solar system, which is about 40 kilometers a second. And the Earth moves around the Sun at about 30 kilometers a second. So you got to add those speeds and you get 70 kilometers a second. So this is the reason for that 70 kilometers a second.
Okay, I've got two major big questions here popping up in my mind, and I think listeners have got the same question. The first question is, how can life exist in space? After all, it's supposed to be deep space, a vacuum where nothing exists. That's why we can see through it. That's what I was taught at school, at least. And the second big round of questions that I have is, how do we know that these microbotic mini forms of life can make it through the atmosphere and sort of, if you like, fertilize conditions, you know, chemicals on the ground? So the first question, would you like to answer that one, Dr. Ferris, please?
This is a little bit complicated because regarding this origin of life on Earth. I think that if we consider transfer within the solar system, I think that if life originated in chemical way on anybody of our solar system, such as Mars or Venus, and was transferred by dust particles, it could also originate on Earth because these planets exhibited probably similar chemistry in early stages of their evolution.
Right.
So what chemical? So this is a possibility, but I don't think that there is any contribution to solution of this chemical origin of life. Maybe this transfer is possible. Yeah, it's true that in comparison with asteroids or meteoroids, dust particles really can travel much faster. Mm-hmm. It's the author assumes velocities of 70 kilometers per second. However, some other authors assume drift mechanisms that can be responsible for the acceleration of dust particles to velocities up to 300 kilometers per second, which is much more. So this is, let's say, interesting spaceship and very fast spaceship for life. But there is another problem. If we consider interstellar transfer, I think that the velocity of interstellar dust is still very low. And the experiments on ISS, they cannot say us, the results cannot say us if any bacteria or in the particular, if we consider the most resistant organisms, so lichens and Antarctic bacteria, and they survived the harsh space conditions.
Yeah, yeah.
But experiment was conducted for 1.5 years. And this is very short period. So in comparison with interstellar distances, of dust is still, and the dust with will stay in under conditions for millions of years.
All right, thank you. I still don't understand. It seems kind of very confusing because we have had discoveries in the past, haven't we, when, you know, a worm was discovered inside a meteorite, which, well, a worm of some kind from another planet. Then, I mean, we know that life forms have come in, but that worm was already dead. Now, we're talking here about living particles. Now, my question, my original question was, how do living particles survive in space?
Yeah, I think they can survive in the interiors of larger objects. Like,
right.
And then there's if there's microorganisms lodged in there, then the survival in space, under space conditions, would be almost indefinite.
Yeah.
For example, we've got many, many experiments now that show that bacteria, on many types of bacteria and viruses, are essentially extremely space hardy, and there is no way in which you can essentially sterilize a hospital ward or something. Some last remnant bacterium always survives the harshest conditions that you can impose. Mm-hmm. And there are experiments like, for instance, in amber that has been recovered from the surface of the earth, or ancient amber, there are microorganisms that have been discovered now that have been lying around in the amber for something like 2 or 3 or 4 million years.
Right.
And the importance of that is that the Earth's environment is not entirely radiation-free. There's a background radiation, cosmic radiation, that's hitting these organisms, and they've survived for sort of millions of years. And by analogy, essentially calculate or estimate that microorganisms, even naked microorganisms, can survive the times that are required for transport from one planetary system to another.
Right.
Survival is not a major issue. And as we said at the beginning, the survival of just a handful, maybe a dozen microorganisms, is enough to seed a planet. A planet that is lifeless.
Right. I'm still confused, I'm sorry, because we were talking about biparticles traveling through space, not comets or or larger objects which could contain a life form.
The problem is that fine dust particles cannot shield neither electromagnetic radiation nor ionizing radiation, such as solar wind. And I think that experiments with nanoparticles exposed to real space conditions will be absolutely necessary. And of course, this study is important because it can initiate such kind of research. But knowledges, we cannot decide if the mechanism of life transfer with cosmic dust is possible or not. This is just a theory, and it is not supported by any experimental result. The current the paper presents just theoretical calculations combined with bibliographic research. So it's I think it's important paper. Yeah, I criticize the paper, yes, but I think that the paper is important and can initiate the further research. But the paper doesn't answer these questions, in my opinion.
Okay, Professor Wickremasinghe, I mean, this whole interest has been sparked by some articles in the mainstream press about, you know, there's this fantastic theory of these bacteria rushing through space like sperm, you know, like piercing through the Earth's atmosphere to germinate, to germinate to Mother Earth, you know. And I mean, the public imagination has gone wild, and you see these people talking, walking around in a daze that we're all aliens now. We've all come from outer space. Now, what is your defense, please? I know that you're not defending this argument, but is there something else we don't know? That in fact would support the theory of bacteria coming over across the vast distances of space from another solar system, from another planet, with living organisms?
I think the idea that life came initially from outside did not originate in a sort of primordial soup. The evidence for that is really profound now. We know that the oldest rocks on the Earth, which go back to sort of 4.3 billion years, and the Earth was then pounded, severely pounded with sort of meteorite comet impacts, and we find the first evidence of microorganisms in those rocks.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is evidence right through the geological record of sudden emergence of huge sort of new species. For instance, the Cambrian explosion of life that occurred 500 million years ago, this was an event that coincided with a huge event of comets hitting the Earth and splashing the Earth in with great fury. And exactly at that time, we find the first appearance of multicelled life.
Mm-hmm.
And so like that, right through the geological record, there are bits and pieces of evidence that are coming together now to show that all of these major developments of life, the origin of life to begin with 4.2 billion years ago, the emergence of multicelled life,
mm-hmm.
and the continuing arrival of life forms even today seems to be gaining a lot of experimental evidence and credibility.
Okay.
I mean, it's not still in the mainstream of science, But I think on a very short time scale, within a few decades maybe, people would regard these ideas as being as obvious to the future generation as the sun is, being the center of the solar system, is obvious to us today. So
yeah.
I think it is it's something that is really gaining ground in a big way. And this paper that you referred to is a very small contribution to the idea that has been discussed.
Yes, I mean,
by myself and Sir Fred Hoyle and a whole bunch of colleagues for over 40 years.
The problem is that, the oldest life, the detection of the first evidences, it comes from rock, ancient zircons, old 4.2, 4.1 billion years. The evidence for the first oceans on Earth come from ancient zircons 4.3 billion years old. However, 2 billion years chemical evolution, it's a lot of time. So it is not that the time for development of too short, because the life has evolved during maybe 1 or 2 million of years, and it's a lot of time, I think.
Okay.
You know, for chemical evolution, chemical reactions are very fast. So if you can imagine some chemical origin of life friendly environment, it could be not evolution but revolution, and then of course it evolution itself takes some time to evolve multicell organisms, photosynthesis, and so on.
Yeah.
But the chemical evolution may have been very, very fast.
Yeah, but there's absolutely no evidence for that. I mean, this is all speculation and hypothesis, almost religion. I think there's absolutely no evidence. What does one mean by long enough time? Millions of years is a long time. But we don't know that anything really happens over that period of time. And the crucial step for the origin of life is the origin of the information content of life. And that has to be considered, and it's not been discussed anywhere in the literature.
That's really interesting. Let's take a break here.
Capitalism is going through a spasm caused by its own generation of technologies that undermine itself.
How can you, with a straight face, make the argument that more guns will make us safer?
We need to build a wall, and it has to be built quickly.
Welcome back to Level Talk Program. Today we're discussing recent research made into the possibility that life could have come to Earth on cosmic dust. I'm talking to Professor Chandra Wickramasinghe, the director of the Buckingham Centre for Astrobiology at the University of Buckingham, and Dr. Martin Ferres from the Department of Spectroscopy at the Czech Academy of Sciences. This is really a hugely interesting story. It's so interesting because we're actually talking about the origins of human life. Now, you just mentioned the word religion, Professor, but the theory that life has come from somewhere else, that goes against the whole creationist theory, doesn't it? I mean, this would be the ultimate sort of spear in the holy box of religious tricks, wouldn't it? If it is actually proven that life has come from somewhere else, and not being created in 7 days and so on. You're getting into deep trouble here, aren't you? I mean, you aren't personally, of course.
I think when it comes to life and when it comes to the origin of life, there is, at least at the end of the road, there is a mystery that has not been solved.
Yeah.
And that science has not solved. And whether life originated through the chemical processes that our colleague is talking about, whether it came from a much bigger system outside of the universe, there still is an unresolved puzzle as to how the information content of life was arrived at. And that is unanswered. And so this is where there's a niche for religion. But the Earth-centered ideas, I think, are going to be, in the long run, proved to be wrong. I mean, 500 years ago, it was thought that the Earth was the center of the entire universe, the center of the solar system. And it took a long time to get rid of that idea and to get to the present situation that we have in astronomy, that the Earth and the solar system are both are really trivial components of the cosmos.
Yeah.
And in a similar way, I think the idea that life was centered on the Earth is deeply rooted in our culture, in our religion, in our philosophy, and so on. It really goes back to Aristotle and the ideas of spontaneous generation of life. Aristotle was a great philosopher in the 5th century BC. He said that if you put a mixture of warm earth and morning dew, you get fireflies. And I mean, that was sort of almost a caricature of what was taken up in later generations of scientists to make into the so-called primordial soup theory. But the basic idea remains Aristotelian, that life has to originate on the earth and everything has to be centered on the earth. So
yeah.
This is, I think, the abandonment of the earth center idea in relation to life is something that is fiercely resisted by both scientists, I think, many scientists, and certainly by the religious people who want to regard the earth as being the center of everything, the most important. Now, we are most important.
Yeah, I guess it is very disturbing, isn't it, for most of us to figure out that actually we aren't the center of everything. But that would also imply then that we're talking about the same building blocks being present everywhere in the universe, that life on Earth may not be that different. Dr. Ferris?
The same building blocks. It's a very interesting topic.
Yeah?
Yeah. We do some research in this field on the origin of life, and we cooperate with Czech theoretical chemists from Brno. It's in Moravia. And because I discuss a lot about building blocks, because many amino acids, many nucleic bases, many sugars, why selected only particulate of these molecules?
Right.
And they provided several calculations, and they test the idea, or say they tested the idea of other building blocks. And the result of their calculations is the life form with these building blocks is the most stable.
Okay, so if the building blocks are most stable, if they consist of the same basic ingredients, then that means that we are all living in a universe which is constructed out of the same building blocks. Now, that would only surely prove the theory, Dr. Ferris, that life is movable, life is transportable, life can travel between solar systems and between planets where there is this thing we call life.
Between planets, as I have already mentioned, this theory is very likely, if we consider very likely, but it's possible, let's say,
Other
investigation, but it is in principle between planets in the solar system. But I think that microbes survive in the universe any interstellar flight, because still the velocities of interstellar dust are too small. Yeah.
Right.
So there is no evidence, no proof of microbial resistance for thousands or millions of years under interstellar conditions.
I think the statement that there's no evidence that microorganisms can survive long periods of time, we don't have access to long periods of time in our laboratories, but we have access to indirect pointers to survival over incredible lengths of time. And I mean, absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. It's something that one could respond in relation to what we just heard. It is much easier, I think, in terms of experiment, it is sort of almost well attested. It's much easier for a microorganism to enter an environment in which it can multiply, right? And this is about, if you put bring a microbe to the earth, when the conditions are appropriate, nutrient conditions are appropriate, and the microbe takes over and multiplies and evolves.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. So I understand.
As long as you have life starting anywhere in the universe, then I think you must have life everywhere, for the reason that life cannot be confined to any one planet. The stuff is moving out of the planet. There's stuff that is being pushed out in various ways and so on. So I think one has to admit that if there's life anywhere at all in the universe, and we know that life exists on the Earth, for sure. That's the most certain statement that we can make.
Yeah.
And because life is here on the Earth, it follows that life from the Earth must have left to other places by now. We know, for instance, 65 million years ago, a huge comet impacted the Earth, caused the extinction of the dinosaurs. And that event would also have splashed back into space a vast amount of living organisms in the surface soil, living bacteria, living genetic material, and they would have been flung out completely out of the solar system, and by now they would have reached other planets. So as I said at the start, life anywhere implies life everywhere.
Professor, may I ask you a question, please? If we've established that the basic building blocks of life throughout the universe are the same or similar, is it not possible then that life could develop independently in different places throughout the universe and the next universe and the cosmos in general, without bits of matter flying between centers of development, if you like, laboratories? Because the building blocks of life are similar, they could be developing all the time, independent of each other. That would be another argument I'd like to throw at you, please, Professor. So Vikramasinghe.
The chemical building blocks are everywhere, and there's no dispute about that. We see it in interstellar clouds, we see it in the galaxy, in external galaxies as well. But the amino acids and the hydrocarbons and so on, if you have a mixture of these, they don't make life. You need to do something very, very special in terms of ordering these molecules in order to get life. So it's the information of life that once it's produced somewhere, then it has to be considered to be essentially movable. That would be my point of view.
Okay, Dr. Ferris, we've got to close the program now. What do you say to that?
Theory of information in genetic code, but it is, I think this interstellar or interplanetary traveling of life does not answer this question, because it's I think the problem is that we are talking about a theory without any proofs, direct proofs. The chemical origin of life on Earth was investigated, has been investigated during last almost 80 years, maybe.
But with no result at all, with zero result. There's been no experiment that has shown that you can turn non-living organic material into life. I think the idea of life starting from outside of the Earth is exciting. It's an exciting prospect. It's something that has to be explored further. But the evidence as we have it now, I think, is very strongly pointing in the direction that life did not start here on the Earth, but came from a very much bigger system.
Yeah.
And that's because that's maybe the cosmos as a whole. So life is a truly cosmic phenomenon.
A truly cosmic phenomenon. Okay. Now, with that comment, we do have to close the program. It's been incredibly interesting talking to Professor Chandra Vikramasinghe, the director of the Buckingham Centre for Astrobiology at the University of Buckingham in the UK, and Dr. Martin Ferris from the Department of Spectroscopy at the Czech Academy of Sciences. And thank you very much indeed, listeners, for being with us. Tune in again next week. Goodbye.